All right. Well, my name is Matt Williams, and it's good to be a part of our gathering this weekend on all of our campuses, all of our services. We have a unique topic that we're working through, but if you're new, I just want to say welcome. I know your campus pastors or hosts have welcomed you, and our church is now, as it turns out, 18 and a half years into it. It's about a 50-50 church. About 50% have a strong church background, and the other 50% do not. And for many of our folks, this is their first church, or their first church where they've really gotten involved. First Bible, first time they've ever thought, paid attention, which is real gratifying for me. I appreciate that. When you send the email saying, hey, it's the first time I paid attention, I love that, right? So keep that coming. We're just going to study together. Here's what we do. It's pretty simple. No, it's not rocket surgery. We study together for a little bit, and then we gather in our singing. And our singing is a form of worship where we can reflect, where we can meditate, where we can respond to who God is and what He said and what He's done. And there's something for all of us, but usually there's something for me personally, for you personally. So we're excited about that. Before we jump in, this may have been mentioned. I want to circle back to it. Men's Roundtable. We are going to be launching a new series in a few weeks called Leadership Values. We'll probably start around the week of February 19th, 20th, somewhere in that area. Maybe different on different campuses, going to go about 7 weeks. Men's Roundtable has been the expression, one of the primary expressions of men's ministry for us, in that there is a certain awkwardness to being a man. It's a natural awkwardness that you feel, particularly in our culture, of what's a man supposed to say, what's he supposed to do, how's he supposed to engage, what is overstepping, what is not, what does it feel like, what does it look like. And so for the last 12 years, we have worked to help create language and categories for men to think about. And it has been really great, not just for our church, but for folks from other churches in town. It's been great to be able to serve them. I meet guys all the time in the upstate who say, hey, we did this at our church, and we used your videos, or we came over and, you know, saw what you guys were doing, and it was just really great for us. And so that's real gratifying. We get stuff from all over the world. People write letters and say, hey, thank you for this. So we're going to take another step, and this is around the idea of leadership, because we lead in our homes, we lead in the workplace, we lead in nonprofits where we serve, or community organizations in our neighborhood. And this is not just a man thing. There's a woman side to leadership too, but this is just what we're doing with our men for this spring, and so we're excited about it. I want to drive you to the website. Make sure you sign up for that. There's other resources on the website. I want to make that available to you, but we didn't want you to miss that, right? This is going to be it's going to be a lot of fun, and it'll look different at our different campuses, different times, so just pick what works for you. All right, we are talking this weekend about singles and the idea of sex, intimacy, and dating. And you think, well, I mean, why would we need a talk on that? And first of all, and if you've been coming the last few weeks, I hope you've seen this balance, that we are not using this issue as a sensationalized idea to gather attention, and we're not also ignoring it or sweeping it under the rug. This is a discipleship issue for us. And so in the same way that there are all kinds of different components of life, we don't want any of those to be outside of the authority of Jesus. We want to bring them all under. This is a discipleship issue. So in our context, when we talk about singles, we're talking about 30 to 35% of our church. Well over 1,000 singles that we know are going to be here on any given weekend. Now, there's a lot more that drift in and out, but 30 to 35% of our church is a safe number, over 1,000 singles in our local body at our different campuses. And so for those of us who are married, we should be in close proximity with singles, that we are making an investment in. Our church should be doing that. We should be doing that individually. So this is an important part of who we are. And we are not to mention that we're raising young singles, all right, and we'll deal with some of that next week. But the question that looms is, what is the role around connecting, around intimacy, around sex and dating? So this talk is not just about the single life. When we taught through 1 Corinthians, we dealt with the single life. When we did the one series on marriage, we dealt with the single life. This is more narrow than just single life. This is single life as it relates to the issue of intimacy. By anybody's estimation, married or single, Christian or non-Christian, the dating world is not going well. The dating scene is not going well. That's not to pick on the dating scene. The married scene is not going well either. But the dating scene, by anybody's estimation, is not going well. The idea that we get connected, very connected, and then we come apart and we move on to the next person has become really normal. And we go, well, we're gonna have that as the normal for pre-married life. It's going to be connect real intimately, break apart, connect real intimately, break apart, connect real intimately, break apart, and then find someone to marry, connect with them, stay connected forever. There's nothing about that that's congruent. There's no way that you're thinking you're going to do this before you get married, and then something magical happens with a certain kind of cake that you eat one afternoon, and then everything's going to be different afterwards. There's just not going to happen. So the mindset is actually turned out to be the same. It's get together, come apart in dating, and it's get together, come apart in marriage. Both those things seem to be consistent. We lack some clarity, we lack truth, we lack power. Here's what I want to challenge you, especially for our singles. Married too, but singles. I want to challenge you to be open in your thinking. Right? This is a great opportunity for us as Americans to show how open-minded we are, because some of the things I'm going to share in the next few minutes are going to be a little different than what our culture teaches or what comes to us instinctively or naturally. We've all been steeped in a way of thinking. We didn't even realize it. So after my sophomore year in high school, I was gone on vacation with my family. Our coach got fired, football coach got fired, a new one got hired. When I got back, some guys came to my house. They go, "It's terrible. This is the worst coach ever." I mean, and they started explaining to me what he had been meeting with them and explaining to them, which seemed fascinating to me. And it was a new kind of offense that we had not seen before. And he goes, "I mean, this is never going to work." I was like, "Do you know our record last year? I mean, do you remember? Is it just me, or does anybody else remember how bad we were? Like, I don't know that it matters what we do now. It's not going to get any worse. It can only get better, right?" And they're like, "Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe." And as it turns out, it got a lot better. Got dramatically better, but it was a new way of thinking. Instead of holding on to the old, at least entertain a new idea. Now, here's one of the ironies. I was thinking about this weekend. I was driving to Atlanta over the weekend to see one of my kids perform in something. I was coming back, and I was thinking the great irony of that is I actually wound up advocating for the new system, and I'm the one who actually lost my position. With just a few weeks before the first game, he's like, "Matt, you're out." I was like, "What? Okay, I do hate you, right? All right, I'm with him." And then, as it turns out, I got to play other positions. Turned out a lot better for me. Turned out much, much better for our team. So there's going to be some challenge, and there might be some personal loss in it. Here's what we do. Normally, we find a passage. This is just my deal. I find a passage. We anchor in it. I don't like to go anywhere. I just like to teach through that passage. We deal with that. That is not the talk for this weekend. This is much more uncomfortable for me, but it's more of a wisdom talk. I'm going to give you four big ideas, okay? Four principles that we need to think about in the context of singles, all right? So the first one is this. Let me walk through, and I'll try to support them as we go. First idea is that dating is a management of intimacy. And this is some things we've worked out in small group. I've worked with some larger groups on this, with singles, college students, even some high school students. Dating is a management of intimacy. And by intimacy, I mean the connection, not just sexual experience. It can be. Sex is a subset of intimacy. So it may be talking, connecting, the emotional bond, the physical bond, all of that is intimacy. Dating is a management of intimacy issue. So 1 Timothy 5:2 says this. There's just a big idea, a big principle. He says, "Treat younger women with all purity as you would your own sisters." This is interesting, right? Is that if I'm either married to someone, so that's my wife or that's my husband, and then if I'm not, then he's my brother or she's my sister. So I got two basic relationships. This is really simple, but two basic relationships. I'm either married or I'm family in the way of brother and sister. So she's my sister or she's my wife. So then you only have one wife, and then you have a whole bunch of sisters. And he goes, so that's how you're to respond to them in how much purity? All purity. Now let me muddy the waters a little bit, okay? From Genesis chapter 2, look at this idea. This makes it a little more complicated. He goes, and the two were united into one. Now the man and wife, they were both naked, and they felt no shame. So then we have this hyper-intimate connection that's even expressed in a physical way in Genesis, which is what we call marriage. So it's all this physical, mental, emotional, spiritual connection. So then you go, okay, so we have treat them as a sister, and then when we get married, then we're going to be family, new family, and naked and not ashamed. So we move from sister to complete intimacy. So then the road that has to be traveled between those two. You go, man, that is, I don't know, how do you make the shift? How do you go from sister to wife? How do you travel that desert? Let me just say, that is not the thing to be frustrated about or fearful of. That's the beauty of the story. That's the journey that you actually get to take. And sometimes singles will look at me like, well, if there's a, I mean, what are you supposed to do with this? What are you supposed to do with that? I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. There's no formula to this. There's no prescription of 8 steps to work through. That's not how this works. This is a story that God's writing, and you're a part of that writing. And there is no prescription or formula for you to follow. You have to kind of seek God and work some of this out under some big ideas and some big principles. And it's a great thing. But to say, because there are some great challenges and some great questions, then it's invalid. I can't do it. Well, let me just say, this is the way, this kind of story is what marriage is. There's no prescription or formula for that either. There's going to be great questions and great challenges that you have to face, and there's going to be nobody there to hand you the answers. You have to figure those things out. So we want to give some principles, and I'll give some practical kind of things on illustrations as we go. The hyper-connecting that we see seems to be the major problem with our modern version of dating. Get together for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, come apart, then get together with someone else for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. You know, we're not sleeping together. Maybe they're sleeping together, maybe they're not. But this hyper-connecting, this coming apart, tends to do a couple things. And I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. It either makes your heart so vulnerable that then you don't want to connect, you're fearful, or it makes you so callous that you're reckless with your intimacy. In either case, it has huge consequences for your marriage. So you're like, what I do before I get married has a bearing on what I do after I get married. Absolutely. Definitely consequences for that. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, he says this. This phrase gets repeated. Promise me, O women of Jerusalem, not to awaken love until the time is right. There is this idea that there needs to be a path that we move along that is thoughtful, that we have to manage the intimacy. We cannot lead with intimacy. We cannot storm the doors with it. We cannot let that be the first thing that connects us. And here's what you'll see all the time, TV, but you'll see it in real life, with people who are dating, people who are talking about it, as we think about it, as we brainstorm it, the great collection of college wisdom. Here's what you'll hear. The connection, sorry, college students, got to take a shot, right? Here's what we do in our culture. The connection between two people becomes the validation for the connection. Is that we treat, when two people come together and they get connected physically, emotionally, we treat it like it was a miracle. Oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe it. We start talking, we still talk. Guys and girls, both of them. Like it was a miracle that that could happen, and it wouldn't have happened if it were not supernatural of some sort. This is, we as humans, we are built with intimacy glue. You spend enough time talking. Now, granted, there is a segment of the world population that grosses you out and you can never connect with them. It doesn't matter what they do. You're just totally turned off by them, right? But there is a large section of the world that, under the right circumstances, with the right energy, you would connect with them, right? And after you're married, it's called an affair, right? So before you're married, the same thing can happen. So in my house, when I walk in once a week at least, I go to my bedroom after work and I throw my stuff down in the bedroom and I look on my nightstand and there will be something that is broken that has to be fixed. My kids think that I can fix anything, okay? And that feels great. It's not true, but I let them live in the dream world, right? Anything that they break, Dad can fix. So I have piles and piles, stacks of crazy glue that I store, right? And I pull it out, and you know, crazy glue can fix just about anything. I got an old pickup truck I drive. It's been held together with crazy glue. You'd be shocked at what you can do. But I will take this ceramic unicorn, load the neck up with glue, right? Because somehow they ripped the head off. And then I put the head back on, and I hold it, and I count to 30 seconds. I ain't hold it. And then I take this hand off. I'm like, look, it's true. I am a magician. Like, I do miracles. There's Jesus. There's me. All right? That's what I think. And then there's that realization when I go to take the hand off the bottom, it won't come off. Because whoever made crazy glue, they made it clear and they made it real thin and it runs down and you can't see it and you can't feel it. And so it always seems to run down and attach your fingers to whatever you're gluing together. Now, we won't even go to the gruesome process of what it takes to get your body loose from something that crazy glue has attached you to, right? But that's what glue does. And so now I found some magical ways to keep from getting attached to whatever I'm fixing. But that's what that glue does. It's not miraculous. It's what it was created to do. You get it in the right situation. You get skin on skin, skin on porcelain. It will glue you to it. It happens every single time. And there is the way we are creating the image of God. We're created a motive. We're created to connect. That's who we are. And so we are going to connect. That is going to happen. It is not a miraculous feat when we find ourselves connected to someone. So the connection should not validate the connection. We have to manage that intimacy. We have to make sure that we are connecting to the right people, that we are not connecting to the wrong people, that we are doing it in the right way, in the right time. There's some guiding principles. But what you see in our culture, too, is that we've become a very needy culture. Is that guys have come to crave affirmation, and they use girls to get it. And girls have become a needy for attention and security, and so they will use guys to do that. And they'll use a sexual relationship or a sexual experience to be able to do that. We become needy, and the idea of postponing that or managing that in a disciplined way, it seems less than romantic. Well, let me show you less than romantic. Look at our marriages. That's what's less than romantic. We need to do a better job on the front end so we have a better marriage on the back end. Okay, second idea. These are not all totally different. In fact, they're hyper-related. Second idea is that dating should be intentional. It should be intentional, substitute purposeful, substitute thoughtful. Should be thoughtful, should be purposeful, should be intentional. One of the phrases that we have used is that it should be commitment before intimacy. And we were all trained in a culture that is intimate before commitment. Is that we believe that we should see if there's a connection as if that's the magic, and then we'll decide to be committed later. And what we are saying is you need to think about intentionally about the future and what commitment would look like and what does it look like to move towards commitment and let intimacy lag behind that. This is, I think, the hardest idea to communicate. And it's the hardest one to assimilate. Just that's my personal opinion. So it's a little bit like going to look for a house and then you get enamored with a wall color. You get enamored with wallpaper, right? And you fall in love with the house, you buy the house, and then you're in it a couple days, and you're like, hey, where's the bathroom? This house has no bathrooms. But we love the wallpaper. The first house that we bought, we didn't fall in love with it because it was anything special. We fell in love with it because it was the only one we could afford. And so we made the deal, and then we fell in love with it, and we're driving away, and the realtor goes, and don't worry about these massive power lines that go over your house. Don't worry about that, because that idea that those kind of power lines give you cancer, that's just this is a legend. That's not really true. And we're like, oh, okay. All right, had no idea. Hadn't thought about that, right? Didn't know. So there is the need to not just fall in love, infatuated with an idea, and not to lead with our emotions. To lead with emotions, to lead with a physical relationship. It's like shooting a joint with cortisone. It has this temporary effect, but it is not reality. Let me give you the two, because it's complicated, let me give you the two extremes. On one extreme would be the one-night stand. All right, that would be completely leading with intimacy, no view of commitment. All right, so that's simple. On the other side, the ancient idea of an arranged marriage. You're leading completely with commitment, no intimacy, no connection first. And what we're saying is, I don't know about this one because I've never really seen it work, but this one definitely doesn't work. And we need to be thinking about there needs to be some middle ground for us, some thoughtful expression of how we come together where we don't lead with intimacy, we lead in a thoughtful way. The biblical idea is from Proverbs 4:23, where he says, guard your heart. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Some translations will say it is the wellspring of your life. In other words, it's where your life comes from, and that means that's going to give direction to where you go. So there's a heart that's got to be guarded. Okay, let me give you a couple simple graphs for this idea, because it's that we need to be intentional with how we manage this intimacy. We need to be thoughtful and purposeful. Let me just show you this first one. If you put intimacy on the bottom line, you put objectivity going up. When you first meet someone, right, that objectivity's high, and so you draw the line down, but it's low on the intimacy scale. Objectivity very high, so these two things work opposite each other. So if objectivity's high, intimacy's very low. Just the opposite is true. Let's say after you've known someone for a long time or you've gotten connected to them, intimacy becomes very high. But if you draw the line back, objectivity is very low. So Bill worked through a little bit of Song of Solomon last week, and there's this point where he extols her body, starting, you know, at the bottom and goes all the way to the top. And you, when you're done reading, you're like, that must be the most beautiful woman in the world. We're like, well, actually, we don't, what would that be? What would the most beautiful woman in the world, what, how could you even say that? What it is, he is captivated by her, right? He has been captured by her. And so his intimacy is very high, so objectivity is very low, which is a good thing for marriage. But when you're dating, objectivity needs to stay high as long as possible. Let me just add to this one line. So you could say that this line from objectivity to intimacy is the process of getting married. Is that you are moving from high objectivity into intimacy. This is what, when you land here, ideally you'd be getting married. You'd be this connected to this person, and then you'd be granting them lots of grace. Because you'd be so intimate, objectivity. But that process. So here's just a helpful hint for our single folks. That if you cut this line in half, this time is your window of opportunity to make a really wise decision. While you're still thinking straight. Right? While you still have some sense about you. If you race through this part when you're objective, and you're down in here, now you're trying to make a decision about who you want to marry, spend the rest of your life with down in here, you're likely to marry what? An idiot, right? That's just on this half of the line. This is what happens. Because you can't think straight. So you have this small window of opportunity to make some really good decisions. How you manage that time becomes really, really important. So let me give you some practical, because this has been principle, idea. Let me just get some skin on this idea real quickly, just for you to think about. First one is, think about a first date. The way that we have used first dates, we've used first dates to get to know people. That doesn't seem to be working. It doesn't seem to be a good idea. Because if you are in proximity to someone, you don't really know them, but you decide to ask them out on a date, and then after that date, you realize, you know what, I don't think we should go any further. Well, now you've been out on a date. So you got to say, hey, I know we've been out on a date and everything, but I don't like you. There's no future for us. I mean, there's just not a lot of really well thought out things to say after a date where there's no context. There's no friendship to it. So it seems like a date is not a great way to get to know someone as well as just being friends with them. Right, in groups, in the context of other friends, you know, a first date where you don't know someone, you walk around the lake, you hold hands, you share dreams, just doesn't seem like a great idea anymore. It seems like we need to find another way to establish a relationship. Another segment I would put in there is you got this first date and how we manage that. We got to manage the intimacy of that. We got to figure out a better way to get there. So then becoming friends seems to be like a better idea. And then, it's true, you get to a certain place in a friendship, there's a mutual attraction, you like her, she likes you, there seems to be something mutual going on. Then it seems like going out on some dates does seem like the next best idea to see if this relationship has any weight to it, if it can go farther. It does seem like taking the next step would be a good idea. Going on a few dates does seem like a good idea. So then, if it doesn't work after a few dates, you're like, oh, I can see, now that we've been out some, I see, you know, we're in a different context. Yes, this is not going to work. This is not a great idea. We just need to be friends. But the beauty of that is you get to fall back on being friends. You already were friends. You get to just take the relationship and say, we explored something, and now we pull back to the place of being friends. It seems to be a healthier way to go. You're thinking through, what would it look like? And so let's say but that does go well. Let's go the other way. It does go well. And then you say, you know what? We've been on some dates. It seems like I really get you. I really get you. I'd love to, we should just date each other for a while. And so we enter into a season of dating each other. Now you're really starting to shoulder some risk. So you got to think about that. What does it look like for us to date? What does it look like for us to be honest with each other as soon as someone knows that this isn't working? Then they should step back and say, hey, this isn't working. We need complete honesty. Not a man or a woman dragging this out, trying to save someone's feelings or trying to continue to enjoy the security. As soon as you know, you should tell them. Daniel Moore told our high school students last week, he said, you should have a conversation of what's it look like for us to break up. Let's talk about how we would break up now that we're dating. Let's go ahead and settle that. What does it look like for us to be mature, adult Christian folks who have to communicate that? Most important, we've got a first date, we got some dates, now we're dating. Then the biggest question is what we dealt with on the screen, the graph, is how do you manage the pace of that? Is that pace, that white line that comes down, is that 6 months? Then we got a lot to learn. We got a lot of work to do. We're going to date for 3 months, then we're going to get engaged. Or are we going to date for 3 years? If you're going to date for 3 years, then you're going to have to manage intimacy for a long time. So we need to move slowly. If we're going to date for 5 years, that's a long time to have to date. Long time to manage that intimacy. So you just got to figure out how am I going to manage the intimacy over 6 months, 18 months, 6 years. I need to think through some of that. And while we tell folks once they get engaged, you need a short engagement. The escalating intimacy of an engagement just gets, it can get toxic really fast if there's not a short engagement. But that's your choice. The challenge I would make to this, we think about a first date, dates, dating, getting engaged, is high school. High school students, you go, well, you tell high school students they shouldn't date. I don't tell high school students that they shouldn't date. I tell them they should ask some hard questions about dating, because it's a little bit complicated. The question you have to ask yourself, you're a 15-year-old high school student, why am I dating? What am I trying to accomplish here? I mean, where is this headed? I mean, you recognize Christian websites will say 10% of people who date in high school get married. No one else believes that, only Christians, right? The real numbers are about 2%. Christians have to slant things to make it look more romantic than it really is. It's about 2% of folks who date in high school will actually get married. So if you say, hey, I'm a sophomore in high school, what am I going to do? You're going to date, you're going to go to college, you're going to date 7 years before you get married? You're going to be able to manage intimacy that long? You're going to be able to manage a connection that long? You go, well, I just need to learn how to date now. Okay, right? That may be the case. But I would think more towards the end of high school than early high school. A lot of 15-year-olds have tried to experiment with that and gotten really, really burned. It almost never goes well for a 14, 15-year-old who says, hey, I'm going to go learn about this. Biggest idea here, high school, college, singles, 30s, 40s, is that you do not need to date alone. You need some people investing in you, pouring into your life, helping you think through it, helping you date. That is really, really important, is that you don't manage the intimacy by yourself. You don't follow that line by yourself, because there's no way, having not been married, that you really know where you're headed to have someone who is there to help you manage that, to help you find the target and manage that process. It's really, really helpful. Third idea. There should be a process. Dating should be a process that leads to marriage. Now, for some of you, you're like, what kind of point is this? No, duh. Everybody knows that. About half our folks believe that idea, and about half of our folks don't. Is that most folks think, or many folks think, and especially in our culture, that dating is just, it's a sea of intimacy. You go for a swim. You're just swimming around. And whatever happens, happens. But I think from a biblical perspective, that dating, starting to build a connection, should go somewhere. It should be headed towards marriage. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 7 says this. Because I wish everyone were single just as I am, yet each person has a special gift from God, one kind or another. And so he goes, hey, single is, in his mind, being single is better than being married, but he gives you two gifts. One is single, one is married. Our culture has made a lifestyle out of being in the middle, all of trying to acquire the benefits of marriage without the responsibilities and the process for how to get there. So we made a lifestyle out of that middle ground. Verse 9, he says this. He goes, but if you can't control yourself, then you should go ahead and marry. It's better to marry than to burn with passion. I taught this a number of years ago. I got lit up by a handful of emails from single folks saying, sounded on Sunday like you said that we should, that if you're burning with passion, you should get married. Wanting to have sex is not a good reason to get married. And I'm like, I think Paul disagrees. I mean, I'm just reading. I'm no scholar. I'm just reading it. He goes, hey, if this is the kind of intimacy and connection you want, then you should get married. These are legitimate feelings, legitimate desires. The idea is this, is that marriage is a valid goal. It is a worthy goal. And it should be pursued. And so the goal of dating should be marriage. Otherwise, we wind up using people. And you go, well, I mean, we're not using. We have mutual consent. We both agreed to this kind of relationship where we're going to date and it's not going to go anywhere. We've both agreed to that. Let me just say, I have been in that conversation a bunch. And I will admit, there are a few couples that start out with that agreement. But I have yet to meet the couple that ended with that agreement. I have yet to meet them. Somewhere along the line, it changes for one of them. And one of them, just, and it's not just a woman thing. It is male or female. One of them will change their mind and say, you know what? I don't like that original deal. I actually do want this to go somewhere. I do want to see a progression. And then you go, well, we're different. We're gonna stay to this agreement. We're going to continue to kind of use each other. It's fine. But the idea is it doesn't honor God if you do that. That is not what honors. You're taking his creativity. You're taking his design, his idea. You're twisting it for your own purposes. And that is not what God wants. We have a great story from Joshua and Sheldon. They attend our Golden Strip campus. And they are brave enough to share part of their story. So I want you to hear. Check out this story from Joshua and Sheldon.
I would say that our foundation was a physical and emotional just reliance on one another. Mm-hmm. And that quickly turned into a sexual relationship.
And I think we were both very, very selfish and self-oriented the first time. It was all about me, or it was all about him. I was very self-promoting, and I think I used our physical relationship as something that I kind of used that as power over him.
We thought we could handle the weight of that type of intimacy. I broke up with her, and through that time, that was something that really broke her. I broke her heart.
From a woman's perspective, being kind of rejected after you've given that much of yourself to someone is, I mean, I know it was a big blow to him, but it's a much bigger event, I think, for a woman.
Felt the weight of my sin for the first time and made a profession of faith, and my life started to really change it took a 180.
Like he said, he told me that he went to church and all of a sudden had this huge change, and I didn't understand it. I think I was very prideful in that, and then I just felt rejected and felt like that I wasn't good enough, or I wasn't what he wanted anymore. So that just showed how much that physical relationship kind of controlled our relationship, I think.
I found out that she had come to know the Lord too. I was very focused on her knowing that I was willing to pursue her in a way that was glorifying to the Lord, and also that was going to be protecting her.
Yeah. The very first conversation we had after we'd been broken up for 2 years, he sat me down and said, I want to be with you, and I want to pursue you because I want to marry you. He made it very clear that he was committing to this.
And it was one of those things. As a male, I know we have the culture has a tendency to want to reject commitment. We want to do everything but commit. And so, for me to come out and verbalize how I was committed was the total opposite of what I was like the first time. And on top of that, we had a goal. So not only was I was saying I committed to her, but I was committed to her towards something.
I mean, I've probably watched this 50 times this week. I mean, this is a great story because it does illustrate how we can make mistakes and there's brokenness there, and how God can redeem that. I mean, this is a powerful idea. And so I said this a couple weeks ago with the Life Change video, is that you feel the power and the weight there. Well, that comes through having to get clear on some things and then not asking the scriptures and the spirit to conform to what you think, is that you conform your life to that truth. And Joshua is leading in that way, and it's powerful. And when you're with them, you kind of see that. Let me give some illustrations real quickly. And so I'm gonna cram a couple things in, and I'm gonna put this on the website so we'll have it in a written form, probably expanded. And I'm gonna give Ryan Donnell and Christy Cole some room to do a little bit of writing, and they'll expand these ideas. But I think the question becomes, for not single in life, but single in dating, whether high school, college, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, that there is, how do you relate as a man or a woman? And so some of the language that we use is pursue, protect, provide for our men, and then invite, nurture, and partner for our women. Let me just give you one sentence, okay, under each one of those, just to kind of stimulate your brain and your thinking around dating through that lens, okay? So if we're talking to the men and we're talking about pursuing, protecting, providing, if you were dating and you're a man, how do you pursue her? You create environments where you can learn about each other, not just you two alone all the time. That's not a great environment. That's not a great context. Is around family, friends, at work, doing ministry together, serving in different capacities. You begin to see each other in a reality that is more normal, right? Not just the hyper romantic dating time. So you create that. Is that you clearly communicate in pursuing your intentions, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you want to do, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how you're doing it. The idea of protecting. Your job is not just to protect your heart, it's to protect her heart also. You're on the hook for that. If you're going to be leader guy and you got that responsibility, that weight to carry, you're responsible to guard both of your hearts. That we're not getting too physical or too emotional. And this does mean that how you feel will be ahead of your reality. Is that you will think, I love her, but you're not at a place where you're going to tell her that yet because your relationship's not mature enough to shoulder that. You're not in a place where you can act on that and carry out the commitment that comes with that kind of emotion. And a lot of guys have said, I love you. And then 6 months later, now they love somebody else. So we are going to be what we say and what we do is going to lag behind a little bit because we're going to make sure that it's the right thing. We're going to be intentional and strategic. How do you provide? Well, you make sure that you have some direction in your own life before you invite someone into your chaos. That you have a plan for how you're going to make a living. You don't have to be wealthy, but you have to be working. You have to make a living. You have to be able to give some direction physically, spiritually, all of that. For our ladies, what does it look like for you to invite? Is that you become pursuable. You don't have unrealistic expectations where he's got to be perfect in every way and he's got to meet all these romantic ideals that you have where you're not self-promoting. And you invite him into a certain level of connection, but it stops right there. Or if he moves towards you at a certain level and he stops there, then you affirm that decision. You affirm that. You've invited him to that place. He's pursued you to that place. It doesn't need to come any farther because of the stage of your relationship. And you affirm that. That becomes not a negative. That becomes a positive. Is that you nurture. And here's what I would say. More of your responsibility for nurturing is nurturing the relationship rather than the man. Not your job to nurture him or coddle him. Your job to nurture a healthy independence. A healthy strength to that relationship that you can affirm and encourage his gifts and his talents, but don't coddle him. And then the last one, partnering, is that you assist him. Now, this is going to be a little controversial. You assist him with his vision for the relationship. And you're like, well, what if I don't like his vision for the relationship? Then that's the wrong man. Cut him loose. Be done. Move on. Find the one that you do like the vision for the relationship. There's someone that you can get on board with and assist. But here's what I'm saying. Don't take the relationship over and make him the man of your dreams. Don't try to force him into your vision and your goals. Don't take over and lead that because then that becomes, instead of man of your dreams, man of your nightmares for the rest of your life. You're going to be fighting that battle forever. Not your job to make him the man that you want him to be. Is that God's doing a work in him. You're either a part of what God's doing in him, but you're not to make him over. You don't want that. All right, fourth idea. Those are just some examples. We'll expand on that. We'll get something written out that you can kind of think through. It gives you, your brain, something to be practical on. You go, well, I'm not really going to do that. I'll do it like this. At least gives you some way to take a step. The fourth idea is that your relationship and dating needs to be honorable and pure. Ephesians 5:3 says this. Is that if you're going to be a Christian, but among you as a Christian, there must not even be the hint of sexual immorality. Not even a hint of it. Right? Not just the reality of it, but even from the perception of it. Is that it's not just not deep into it, not into it at all. For men, anything that gets you turned on, moving towards arousal, where you're wanting to consummate that is not a healthy place for you to be. That is the hint of immorality. Ladies, you have to be careful. What are you doing? What are you stirring up? What are you, because you're like, well, this is not that hard for me to manage, but can you, but he may not be able to. And can you subjugate your need for attention to the idea of sexual integrity? And remember this, if he is having sex with you or involved in sexual experience with you, that does not mean that he likes you. It means that you like him. You're like, well, I mean, I would never be that intimate with someone if I didn't like them. Right, that's you. But you are not of that species over there. He's a different creature. It's just different. And so you need to understand, you are not accomplishing very much by being very physical with this man. You are not creating weight with him. You are not binding. It's not as binding for him as it is for you. Let me give you an old word. This is a good word, but it's an old one. The word is defraud. We don't use it much, unless you're a lawyer, then you use the word. But this is a good word for us. It means to obtain through deception. And what we have is we have ladies who are stirring men. It's a form of deception. It's a way to get them attached to you, or you think that you're stirring them up because you love the attention. And then we have men who are defrauding ladies by using a physical, emotional relationship, what they say, not just what they do with them, but what they say to them to attach them to themselves. They're obtaining something, but they're defrauding them. And anytime we have a relationship where we're not truthful, or there's the implication of a deeper commitment than what there really is, that is fraud. We are defrauding people. And that is more than the hint of immorality. You go, well, what can I do as a single? How far can I go as a single? Where's the line? How far can I get? How close can I get? Here's what you can do as a single, as well as a married person. You can honor God. And you cannot have a hint of sexual immorality. That's what you can do. You can honor God and not have a hint. So you go, well, I mean, oral sex is not really sex. But is it honoring God? I actually think that it is, but is it honoring God? It is not. Making out with your sister, is that weird? Yes, that's weird. Don't do that. Right? You don't get to make out with your sister. Holding hands, all we do is hold hands. But if you said one thing, that the relationship has this kind of boundary, but then you're holding hands, are you sending mixed signals? I don't know if you are or not. And maybe you have a relationship where that's fine, but you may be in a relationship where you're not ready for that. It doesn't need to be that. You're sending too many signals. Sharing your deepest emotions and dreams, which is weird when you do that with someone and then you marry someone else and then they come to your wedding and they're like, oh, he said the same thing to me like 2 years ago. Is that weird? Yes, it is weird. But if we're treating each other like brothers and sisters, then there's honor even after we marry someone else because of how we related to each other. Is it how you treat a brother and a sister? What is it that we're trying to accomplish? These are great questions. Are we using other people? Like marriage, there is not a formula. There are some guiding principles like guarding your heart, not awakening love. I mean, there's a handful of principles that you get to work with and you get to explore. And the responsibility is not just on our men. It is on our men and our women. There's not a formula. But you don't get to check out and go, well, I'm just going to go the easier way. If you're a Christian, you don't get to go the easy way. You have to do some thinking. You have to be intentional. You have to be strategic and ask some hard questions. And then you have to get some help and say, how do I manage? I've never done this before. How do I get from here to here? And then through some conversations with some married folks, they can help you get there. Our church, that's part of what we do as a church. It's part of our job. For most of us, singleness is a season. For some of us, singleness will be, that's how you're going to live. And so for one of my mentors, he stayed single his whole life. Beautiful man, great ministry. He married ministry. That's what he gave his life to. But that's actually a little more rare. For most of us, it is a season that we work through. And when you think about it, here's what we'll say at the end of a lot of our sermons, right? We'll say that marriage is this great illustration of the gospel. Is that Jesus is the groom and the church is the bride and we're with him for all eternity. And it's this marker of unconditional love. Is all that true? Oh, that's really, really true. So is marriage a great illustration for the gospel? It really is. But it's not near as good as being single. Because if you look at my reality right now, my heart is married to the king, right? But I am still the bride in waiting. He has not come for me yet. I still live in a fallen world. So actually, the life that the church lives right now is much more the life of the single person. Is that they are waiting on the groom to come get them. And so there is a beauty to this, is that we are those that are, as the church, we are waiting in faith for the day when he comes for us. And when you are single, you are living out the gospel in that way too. Is that you are waiting for the day when God provides. And so you're going to wait in faith, not in panic, not in desperation, not in suffering. No, there are hard days. There are days when you are lonely, and there are days when you feel alone. There's no doubt about that. And that is what community is for. It is to heal those wounds. But you are waiting, and that is a great picture of the gospel, is that the one who died for us is the one who calls us to live a holy life. And so he didn't die so we just live however we want to. He died so that we could live under his authority, so that there wouldn't just be the possibility remotely that we could be holy, but it would be a powerful reality for us, that he would make us holy. And so as we wait on him, we're saying, some of us sometimes we're saying, I've tried and I can't change. If you are in that place where you go, hey, this is how I've been living for 20 years, 15 years, 5 years, 30 years. This is how I've been living. I don't think I can change. That is the greatest statement that you could make. And then you take one more step and say, can you help me? These are all the people I've been with. This is all the sin that I've done. I don't even know where to go from here. That is what our church was created to do, to help you navigate that. I didn't have parents. My parents got divorced. I don't know how I would build that relationship. That's what our church is here to do. The gospel gives us the strength and the power to move forward without shame into those kinds of relationships. Let's pray. Let's worship. Let's ask for his blessing. Father God, you challenge us in the deepest ways. And we get challenged sometimes around our money, that if we're going to be disciples and we're going to follow you, we got to deal with our money. And that is true. But even more so on this issue, if we're going to be disciples, we got to deal with our sexuality, how we handle our vessel, how we take care of our bodies, how we interact with others. Father, the life that we live, single or married, we have to ask the question, are we glorifying you? Are we honoring you? And for many of us, it's a different way of thinking, and it challenges us to the core in different ways. And there may be some loss for us. We may have been getting life from relationships that are corrupt. Father, would you show us what it means to respond to you in an honorable way? What does it mean for us to have honorable relationships that are pure, that are dynamic because you make them powerful because they're based in truth? Would you give us clarity for that? Help us to worship you now. Jesus' name.